This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good evening. This is Dr. Everett Piper, President of Oklahoma Wesleyan University in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, filling in for Tony Perkins here on Washington Watch, where we discuss the news and the views not only in Washington, D.C., but from coast to coast. July 5th, 2017, the day after Independence Day. I hope you had a great 4th of July celebrating the freedom and the liberty that God has blessed us with here in the United States of America. Coming up today on Washington Watch, we have several stories that I know you're going to want to stay tuned to hear and then to engage in a Q&A in the last quarter hour of this program. North Korea just launched another missile. You'd have to be living under a rock to not know that. This time, they've upped the ante. It's an intercontinental ballistic missile, an ICBM. We're going to have Congressman Mo Brooks of Alabama join us to discuss what he thinks the next steps for President Trump need to be as we deal with this rogue nation and its tyrant leader. CNN is receiving significant pushback out of the fact that they outed the creator of a GIF that President Trump tweeted of him body slamming CNN. Tim Graham of the Media Research Center will be here with his analysis of that particular dispute between CNN and the issue of outing this particular young man who created this GIF of President Trump, obviously a joke, body slamming CNN. Here in my home state of Oklahoma, there's been a state university that made a decision a week or two ago to take the cross off of the steeple of an iconic old chapel, a 60-year-old chapel, on its campus, and they have reversed that decision, at least apparently at this time. They're going to not take the chapel, take the cross off the chapel, or the Bibles or other religious paraphernalia out of the chapel, but yet they're still being pressured to do so by those in our country who believe that the state should be expunged of any Christian influence. We'll have former Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll of Florida here to discuss the legal ramifications of that. Excuse me. So, again, this is Dr. Everett Piper. I'm president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University. A little housekeeping before we move into the program. The call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. Remember, if you want to follow Tony on Twitter, it's T. Perkins. And if you want to follow me likewise on Twitter, it's Dr. Everett Piper. That's D-R-E-V-E-R-E-T-T-P-I-P-E-R. Again, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, where we stand boldly and unapologetically for the truth of Christ and the truth of Scripture, and we actually have an institute, a center for capitalism, free enterprise, and constitutional liberty, where we celebrate the Constitution and we celebrate free enterprise at our university rather than bemoan the opposite and actually disparage our seminal documents. We actually believe they're good, not bad, and we teach that accordingly here at Oklahoma Wesleyan University. North Korea. North Korea launched another missile Tuesday morning. This time, the United States officials believe it was North Korea's first ICBM. The missile landed in the Sea of Japan after traveling over 600 miles. With us now is Congressman Mo Brooks. He serves the 5th District of Alabama, and he also serves on the House Armed Services Committee. Congressman, welcome to Washington Watch.
My pleasure.
Thank you for joining us. I know you're a very busy man. I'll try to be brief in my intro comments here and then turn you loose to help us understand what you believe we should be doing as a free country and a free republic in responding to a rogue nation like this. So this was their 11th missile test of the year, and North Korea itself says that it intends for these ICBM missiles to be used to launch nuclear weapons that can hit any city in the United States as well as Japan, South Korea, and elsewhere. So they're not even hiding their agenda. It appears that the United States has been asleep at the switch for maybe a couple decades in previous administrations and ignoring this man and his father that preceded him and their evil intent and their desire to develop weapons that could be used perhaps even offensively in a nuclear strike against the free world. Can you help us understand what in the world is going on with this man? What are the facts as they relate to these missile tests that he's orchestrating? And what do you believe, as a member of the Armed Services Committee, we should be doing about it?
Well, those are a lot of questions. Let me just begin with, nobody knows what the mental state of the North Korean leadership is. We don't have the ability to psychoanalyze him. We don't know if he's crazy, has a mental imbalance, and hence is a more serious threat, or if he is acting as his ancestors have similarly acted in order to draw attention to North Korea, in order then to work out some kind of concessions, either from China or South Korea or the United States or whomever. So the psychological profile on the North Korean leadership is very, very foggy at best. I'll give you my personal view on what is transpiring. My personal view is that he's crazy smart. And by that I mean he wants to live, he wants to be a player on the world stage, and having nuclear weapons coupled with delivery systems make him a player on the world stage. But if he is smart and if he is sane, then he wants to live. And he knows that if he were to launch a strike against the United States, that the United States would retaliate with a total obliteration of North Korea, and that he would die. That's the same kind of mutually assured destruction doctrine that we have had with China, that we've had with the Soviet Union, now Russia. And as long as you have sane leaders of those countries who do not want to die, then the mutually assured destruction doctrine works to prevent the use of nuclear weapons by either side. I personally believe that the mutual assured destruction doctrine works with North Korea, and that while they are seeking the capability of launching missiles, perhaps nuclear-tipped missiles, I do not anticipate them actually launching them against the United States unless there is some kind of war that involves the United States, something that has precipitated it. And I'm much more concerned, by way of example, about the Iranians. Now, interesting little history here. President Clinton is the one that empowered North Korea to get nuclear weapons. And once they got nuclear weapons, the genie was out of the bottle. Now we've got another Democrat president, Barack Obama, who has empowered, legitimized Iran's efforts to get nuclear weapons with the delivery systems that will accompany those nuclear weapons. We can anticipate Iran will have nuclear weapons in 10 to 15 years with a delivery system that could possibly reach the United States, certainly reach Israel. The distinction I would draw between Iran and North Korea is this. Iran seems willing to commit suicide if, in taking out the United States of America and Israel, they do so. That makes them much, much, much more dangerous than North Korea. They have a religious idolatry in Iran that we have seen most recently with some of those suicide bombers in various parts of Europe, and that we saw in 9/11 in the United States of America with the Twin Towers and the attack on the Pentagon.
Okay, Congressman,
so I would be much more concerned. Go ahead.
Congressman, do you believe, I'm going to go back to your comments on North Korea, and I do think they parallel with Iran too. Do you believe a preemptive strike by the United States to take the missiles out or any delivery systems out in North Korea would be a mistake, because it would be a provocation that would give him an excuse to engage in war? Do you think that would be a mistake, or would you say a more firm hand would be appropriate?
At this point, with President Clinton having empowered the North Koreans to obtain nuclear weapons, we have no good options. All of them are high risk. We can sit and wait and hope that the North Korean leadership will not launch a strike against the United States of America. That's a bad option. We can preemptively strike North Korea with who knows what kind of consequences on Seoul, with the military capability artillery that North Korea has trained on the capital of South Korea. Who knows what would happen with respect to China and Russia, who over the decades have had either very good or a somewhat lukewarm relationship with North Korea. So we don't have any good options. Probably the best option is to continue to develop our missile interceptor system, both at the low range, the descending range, and the mid-course range, in order to intercept and take down whatever missiles North Korea may launch, should North Korea reach that point of actually launching them.
So you would argue that we should take a more defensive posture rather than a preemptive posture and posture in dealing with North Korea at this point. Is that correct?
That's what I would do. I would put more interceptor missiles in Fort Greely, Alaska, and Vandenberg Air Force Base in California, maybe another site if it's beneficial for us to do so. I would continue to hone our hit a bullet with a bullet technology, which has shown great promise and has done remarkably well in some of the tests that we've had.
So you have confidence. You have confidence that those systems would work if we had to use them in a defensive posture.
I have high confidence that if North Korea were to launch 5 to 10 intercontinental ballistic missiles at the United States of America, that we would take them down. Now, if they get 30, 40, or 50, they start to overwhelm our defensive capability. That's why those missile interceptor systems are not a deterrence to China or Russia. They have so many ICBMs that we can't possibly defend against all of them incoming. Because you have to launch typically more than one interceptor to have a high degree of confidence that you're going to take down the incoming missile.
So there'd be just too many if you were the attack were to come from a more prominent, more well-armed nuclear power. But you think in the case of North Korea, because their missiles would be so limited that we would probably be able to defend ourselves. Well, what about, I interrupted you on Iran. You seem to have a different position.
Oh, that's true. For the next 5 or 10 years with North Korea, I think that's true. But at some point, they may start developing the numbers that we lack that security. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I interrupted you on Iran. You seem to have a different perspective. I think you were going to take a slightly different nuanced angle on Iran. So go ahead and run with that.
Well, I have seen statements by the Iranian leadership, and I think they're publicized, that indicate that the Iranian leadership is willing to sacrifice their own country if they can take out the United States of America and Israel with them. It's the suicide bomber approach. The Iranian leadership seems to take that approach based on their adherence to Islam, fundamentalist Islam, and that makes Iran much more dangerous because they are less susceptible to be swayed by the mutually assured destruction doctrine that has kept the United States at peace with China and Russia over the decades. So I'm much more concerned about Iran and what they may do based on religious zealotry than I am about North Korea. I'm still concerned about North Korea, don't get me wrong. There are things we have to do, countermeasures to employ. But we don't have a lot of good options at this point, and the best one seems to be to increase our missile defense capabilities. Iran's a whole different can of worms.
So are you implying that you would act more preemptively with Iran?
Well, I'm going to state that I think with Iran, if they get nuclear weapons coupled with missile delivery systems that can reach the United States of America, and if we still...
Congressman, quickly here, I've got 10 seconds.
If we still harbor concerns that Iran may be willing to give up themselves to kill Israel and the United States, at that point a preemptive strike is much more palatable.
Congressman, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch this afternoon. Very informative, very important, perhaps one of the most important issues of our day. Coming up next, CNN is receiving major backlash after it revealed the Reddit username of a young teen who created a recent GIF of the Trump body slamming CNN. We'll talk with Tim Graham of the Media Research Center right after we return.
Every day, Christian values are increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. What can ordinary Christians do to make their voices heard in their day-to-day lives and in Washington, D.C.? Family Research Council is here to help with answers and insight from our experts. Our work in Washington, D.C. is to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture. We want to hear from you. Send us your questions about how you can better live out your faith beyond the four walls of your church, or about any issue that FRC stands for, issues like life, marriage, and family, or religious liberty. Go to frc.org/askfrc and enter Ask FRC in the subject line. We'll consider your question, and you may also have a chance to be published on our blog. Again, that address is frc.org/askfrc. Thank you for standing with us.
So, what would you do with an extra $500 a month in your budget? $500. This isn't hypothetical, by the way. This is something you may need to think about very soon if you decide to become a member of MediShare. MediShare is a way to pay for your healthcare, and typically it costs $500 less per month for a family versus other healthcare plans. So seriously, think about this. You could pay off loans, pay down a mortgage, save the money for retirement, donate to charity. That would be a big deal. But you know what? Here's the best thing. MediShare works. It has 250,000 members, and it's growing fast. With MediShare, not only do you save, you don't have to pay for things you don't believe in either, and that is a beautiful thing too. So here's how you can find out more, and you might actually wind up saving even more than $500 a month. So check into it. Here's the number. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23, now available in Montana. 855-PSALM-23.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms in association with American Family Studios introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. Remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. I will be taking calls in the last 15 minutes of the hour. Next up, we want to discuss the major fallout over the past couple days between President Trump and CNN with regard to the CNN body slam video tweet. A tweet showing a modified video of President Trump wrestling a man with a CNN logo superimposed over his face stirred up the entire blogosphere, I suppose you want to call it, and CNN for that matter. And then the cable news network reported the username of the young teenager who was behind the controversial GIF, ultimately forcing Trump's CNN video creator to apologize. Joining us now is Tim Graham, the executive editor of Newsbusters, and he is the Media Research Center's director of media analysis. Tim, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you.
Delighted that you've taken the time to join us right now. Well, the video shows a professional wrestling stunt, I think it was from 2007, that had Trump punching out the WWE leader Vince McMahon. Except the user superimposed the CNN logo over McMahon's face. The president retweeted the video Sunday and called CNN fraud news, which is nothing new for him. On Tuesday, the user posted the video and apologized. He posted the video and then apologized and said it was created purely as satire and was not meant to call anyone to violence against CNN. I find it hard to believe that anyone thought this thing was a call to violence. But nonetheless, that's where we are in the dialogue right now. So here's my first question. How is it that a Shakespeare play that has a part depicting President Trump being assassinated is okay, but a tweet about CNN being body slammed isn't? Is there a bit of inconsistency here in terms of analyzing these things?
Well, perhaps it's that Shakespeare is Shakespeare and that pro wrestling is so far below Shakespeare on a cultural plane. That how could you possibly think that a play about Julius Caesar would imply violence against Trump, whereby this is, you know, they think it's much plainer. But it's obviously much plainer that it's a joke. And I think that it's a, in this case, everybody understands it was meant as humor. I suppose you could say, let's say if they had put the face of Anderson Cooper on Vince McMahon's head, that would seem more like an encouragement of punching Anderson Cooper in the face. I think the fact that they used the logo depersonalizes it.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. It's an excellent point. So do you think the mainstream media is looking for a reason to be offended, or do you think they have just cause to be offended? How can you help us analyze and decipher and vet this information of this ongoing conflict between the mainstream media and, I'm going to say, the conservative right? I don't know that Donald Trump is on the conservative right, but the mainstream media and anybody that they have an ideological difference with. How do we reconcile this conflict as we're analyzing these mutual claims of fake news and all the other various and sundry different name-calling that's going on?
I think in this particular case, you have to begin with the idea that CNN is, and especially their media reporters, like Brian Stelter, they're very invested in a narrative that Donald Trump isn't just upset with the media, that Donald Trump means to destroy the media. When you start from that idea that there's like sort of a conspiracy theory that Trump is this authoritarian figure who's going to crush the news media, and they use these comparisons, the media regularly refers him to Hitler, to Stalin, to Kim Jong-un, to Hugo Chavez, to terrorists and suicide bombers. There's just no limit to the bizarre things they're going to compare him to. So, I mean, when he responds, and they can try to plausibly claim Trump's encouraging violence against journalists, they're going to take that shot, despite the fact, as you suggested in the open here, there is so much out in the culture of people doing violence to Trump, from Kathy Griffin to Jay-Z to Marilyn Manson and so on, to the author Michael Chabon suggesting he gets up every day hoping Donald Trump has a massive stroke. I mean, that. So the idea that if they're going to suggest that this Trump was tweeting out a message of violence to CNN, everything all these other people are doing is promoting a message of violence against Trump.
Now, this is your business. You're watching these debates on a minute-by-minute basis, I assume. How do we resolve it? Again, we're speaking primarily right now to a Christian audience that believes in turning the other cheek and taking the high ground and not responding with an insult when you've been insulted, that there's a better way, a higher way, a more noble way to resolve conflict. What advice would you give as you're watching these debates? What do you think Trump should do? What do you think those that are disturbed with the mainstream media and their apparent bias, what do you think we should do to claim the higher ground?
Well, this is a good question. I don't think Trump would take our advice. I think the opposite, the other side of that coin, though, is sort of the George W. Bush model, which was to always turn the other cheek to the point, you know, that they'd spun your head all the way around and you just never really responded in kind. I think, obviously, the Trump voter, the conservative voter, wants some pushback on the press. So, I mean, obviously, I would like to say, let's do it the way that we like to do it here at Newsbusters, which is we're going to just bring the facts. We're just going to bring, here's what you did. Here's what you didn't do to Obama. You absolutely have a case to be made that the news media acts as the opposition party in the United States. They do not act like objective people. They do not act like referees or umpires. They say all the exact same things the Democrats say.
So they've got the Democratic talking points, and you're suggesting that the best way to confront these talking points is with facts rather than feelings, rather than hyperbole, rather than name-calling. Present the facts, which is what your organization does.
Well, and we're trying to, you know, obviously there's so much of the news even that isn't facts. A lot of it is, there's so much in the news when we use the term fake news. There's so much in the news that it's a projection into what is going to happen, that we actually don't know whether it's going to happen. But the news is full of speculation about what's going to happen next. And, of course, with Trump, everything is, this is going to go wrong, this is going to go wrong. What he did here is going to be a disaster. That's a fiasco. And that's part of it. I think when he makes this fake news complaint, it's just that there's so much of the news that's not reporting. It's commentary. It's punditry. It's, what's going to happen?
Tim, I really appreciate you. I'm going to have to cut you off here because I need to go to a commercial break. Thank you for taking the time. Again, our listeners really need to check in with your work and pay attention to what you're doing in vetting the media. Coming up next, an Oklahoma university has reversed its decision to remove all Christian symbols, including crosses and Bibles, from its historic 60-year-old campus chapel.
Here's Dan Celia.
Well, we've got a little bit of economic data coming out on this shortened trading week. On Monday, we got the ISM, the manufacturing numbers. It came in a little bit better than expected and better than the month of May. It came in at 57.8. They were expecting 55.6. So that's some pretty good news. And obviously, the markets on Monday indicated that, with the exception of the NASDAQ. Construction spending was flat. That's a little disappointing, but keep in mind, flat is up from a negative 0.7%. So I guess one could say there was a 0.7% swing in construction spending, but it's a little odd for the month of May to see it flat. But nonetheless, that's where we were. Tomorrow, we get the ADP employment numbers. That's the private sector non-farm payrolls numbers. We'll see. Last look, it was 253,000. Trade deficit also comes in tomorrow. Trade deficit has been moving in the right direction, so that's good news. We'll see if we can continue that trend. And then we get the ISM manufacturing, or the service sector number, that will be out later, and that is expected to be a little bit better than it was for the month of May. The big number, of course, Friday is the non-farm payrolls numbers, and it's expected to be pretty low. They're looking at 177,000, but that's compared to 138,000 for the month of May. We'll see. I expect that it's going to be closer to the 200,000 mark than 177. So we'll watch that. That's what's happening for the rest of the week.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
Washington Watch. Dr. Everett Piper here, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Remember that the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. And after this segment and the break to follow, I will be taking calls. 866-372-7234. Well, after receiving pressure from the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, East Central University here in Oklahoma announced plans to remove crosses and Bibles and other religious symbols and paraphernalia from its campus chapel. The university has since, just recently, halted efforts to yank religious icons from the Boswell Memorial Chapel, which has been up for 60 years. And primarily, it's from your voice. It's the voice of the people who cried out and said, this is ridiculous, especially here in Oklahoma. This is our culture. These are our icons. These are our symbols. This is who we are as a people. This is our cultural reality, our cultural identity. And many of us are Christians and want these symbols retained and not disparaged. With us now is somebody familiar with these kinds of legal battles. Her name is Jennifer Carroll. She's the former Lieutenant Governor of Florida. Lieutenant Governor Carroll, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me. How are you today?
I'm doing great, and thank you for taking the time to join us. All right, so there was backlash. The university decided to take the symbols down, to take the cross off of the steeple, off of the steeple of the chapel. And they did so as the result of the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State forcing them, or at least pressuring them, to do so, and they capitulated, they complied, they folded and said they were going to take the stuff down. In fact, the East Central University president here in Oklahoma, Dr. Patricia Pearson, said in a statement released Thursday, ECU is doing its best to follow the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment of the Constitution. In other words, she was agreeing that the Establishment Clause necessitates taking religious symbols off of a state university facility. Do you agree? Does the Establishment Clause require that?
You know, people have been confusing separation of church and state with those two together, assuming that it's in the Constitution. No place in the Constitution does it talk about the separation of church and state. It says that the state will not create, the government will not create a state religion. And because we've become such a litigious society, everyone just buckles, but the first less than 1% objects to having a cross or saying God or saying a prayer because they don't want to be sued. So they go the easy way out rather than standing up for what's right.
All right. So you would argue that there's nothing in the Constitution, there's nothing in the Establishment Clause, there's nothing in the First Amendment that would require a state organization, a tax-funded entity such as a university, to purge itself of all Christian symbols. You would argue that we don't need to do that. Is that correct?
That is correct. Even our legislative body, when they start their day in the chamber, they start it with a prayer. And that is the highest of government institutions being paid by taxpayer dollars.
So what do we do? By the way, I want to let all the listeners know the Attorney General here in Oklahoma is Attorney General Mike Hunter. And his phone number is 405-521-3921, 405-521-3921, if you want to call him and encourage him to fight back against this Christian cleansing, this religious cleansing of our culture. What would you recommend we do as rhetorically or actively? What would you tell the listeners to do as we push back against what seems to be an effort to establish a state religion? That establishment would be a state definition of religion, i.e. secularism, that is antithetical to what the majority of the people of that state want to embrace. So we really are being imposed upon by the establishment, and they're doing it under the Establishment Clause, it seems to me.
Well, not only that, is that other religions are taking precedence over Christianity. Anything the other religions want to do, and if they voice their concern or opinion that they get priority, it should not be a priority over anyone's religion, since that we have the freedom of religion in this country. But what the public should do is contact their representative, contact the attorney general, and also, too, like I mentioned, the litigious society that we're in is very costly to fight these battles. So, unfortunately, people will have to step up to the plate, even if it's to give a dollar, to give assistance to organizations that want to fight back, like Judicial Watch and other organizations that have been fighting a good fight to maintain the integrity of our Constitution and maintain the rights of every human being that live in this country.
Did you have specific challenges in Florida when you were in office?
The challenge that I had, and it wasn't so much on the grounds of religion, but it was on a right to life, and was the Terry Schiavo case, where I was in the legislature at the time. And that was a heated battle, as giving her parents the authority to keep her alive or leaving the authority with her husband, because he was the husband at the time she went into a coma, give him the authority to take her off of life support. So that was a very contentious battle with regards to a freedom of choice, with regards to a religious life choice freedoms that the parents wanted to have for their daughter.
Do you see light at the end of the tunnel? We feel as if we've been beat up time and time again on these purgings of Christian literature, Christian symbols, Christianity from the town square, from the public square. Do you see light at the end of the tunnel?
I am. With Donald Trump as president, he's come out and he's given churches the freedom to speak from the pulpit of their belief with regards to their support for any political
figure. Mrs. Carroll, I'm going to have to cut you short here because we've got to take a commercial break. Thank you for joining us this afternoon on Washington Watch.
Thank you.
All right, as we go into the next top of the hour, as we go on the next 15 minutes, I'm going to take calls. 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. We can talk about any of the topics of the day, and I'm going to prime a couple new ones. We'll be right back after this break.
A boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman with American Family Association and American Family Radio. That is a highlight of our tour of the Holy Land when we go on the boat ride on the Sea of Galilee. A special time to be on the very water where Jesus walked, where he spent time with his disciples. And you know, in fact, you're the place where Jesus was. So many sites we're going to see in the Holy Land that are just like that. We know Jesus was here. The trip is in March 8th through the 16th, and we'd love for you to come with us. So many places we're going to see, you've read about since you were a child. For more information, go to the website twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to you in the mail, just call us at 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, extension 5.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you could be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
The American Family Association invites you to help us make In God We Trust more than a slogan. Since 1977, the American Family Association has been a voice to remind America that the blessings of our nation have come from God's gracious hand. Request your free In God We Trust wristband today and order more to give away at afa.net/trustgod. That's afa.net/trustgod. Get 40 and help the American Family Association celebrate our 40th anniversary.
Dan Celia of Financial Issues.
I think income ultimately is the most important thing that we protect. I know one thing, and I know this from sitting across a lot of tables from a lot of people over the years, that at some point in time, maybe it's 75, maybe it's 85, there will be a point in time where the only thing you care about is how much income you have coming in. Don't let your portfolio be 100% subject to the volatility in the markets or dependent upon the market. Shore up some permanent income along with Social Security and your maybe a pension. Have some charitable gift annuity to shore that up. I hope you'll call the AFA Foundation today and find out more detail about a charitable gift annuity.
Call and speak with a representative of the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. This is Dr. Everett Piper, president of Oklahoma Wesleyan University here in Bartlesville, Oklahoma, sitting in for Tony Perkins this afternoon. Remember that if you want to follow Tony on Twitter, you can do so at T Perkins. If you want to follow me, it's Dr. Everett Piper. That's D-R-E-V-E-R-E-T-T-P-I-P-E-R. Likewise, you can go and follow the blogs and other posts on the Family Research Center's website. So that's FRC. Go to the Family Research Center website. That's FRC. And you can follow Tony and his posts and the other commentary that the Family Research Center provides. If you want to follow Oklahoma Wesleyan University and my particular commentaries and blogs, you can go to www.okwu.edu, and I'd welcome your partnership in that effort, too, to follow us what we're doing here at Oklahoma Wesleyan University in teaching a biblical worldview as well as the virtues of the Constitution, free enterprise, constitutional liberty, and taking a bold and unapologetic stand for pro-life, pro-marriage, and the orthodoxy of our faith, those things that are right and just and true and not dictated by the whims of culture. Today, the call-in number is 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234, and I welcome your calls. We could talk about any of the previous discussions, ranging from North Korea to religious freedom here in Oklahoma and the chapel and the removal of the cross, etc. I'd also like to use that as a segue to talk about the First Amendment and to talk about whether or not the United States is a Christian nation. I'm going to quote Ravi Zacharias. Many of you, if not almost all of you, know Ravi Zacharias and his work. He's one of the foremost Christian apologists of our day. He travels the world defending the Christian faith. If you don't know Ravi, go Google his name and follow him. He is brilliant. He defends the faith like no one else. And he teaches the rest of us how to do so and the importance of doing so. He recently said, in fact, he posted this on July 2nd, just a couple days ago, America may not be a Christian nation per se, but only the Judeo-Christian worldview could have framed such a nation's ideals and ideas and values. All men are created equal, and they are endowed with their Creator with certain unalienable rights. No other religion or secular assumption can affirm such a statement, except the Judeo-Christian worldview. That's Ravi Zacharias. No other religion or secular assumption can affirm such a statement except the Judeo-Christian worldview. We are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. No other religion believes this. No other secular assumption can affirm this. These are the seminal documents and words that founded our nation. And Zechariah says, we may want to say that we're not a Christian nation per se, and that we're a pluralistic culture, and that we welcome religious freedom, and that for those that don't want to embrace Christianity, they still have the freedom to live accordingly in this nation. But it's the Judeo-Christian worldview that framed our nation's ideals, ideas, and values. To that, I responded with this. Without the assumption of the Christian religion, we have no rights. We are designed to operate within certain constraints that actually enhance, rather impede, our liberties. I'll say that again. Without the assumptions of the Christian religion, we don't have any rights. We are designed to operate within certain constraints that actually enhance, rather than impede, our liberties. If there is no Creator, then we have no freedom. This is why Thomas Jefferson said, I hold, this is Thomas Jefferson's quote, I hold that when we take a view of the universe in its parts, it is impossible to perceive, design, consummate skill, and infinite power. Let me go back and say that again. I hold that when we take a view of the universe in its parts, it's impossible not to perceive, design, consummate skill, and infinite power. It is impossible not to believe that there is a fabricator, a creator of all things. Thus, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. Thomas Jefferson. The First Amendment gives us the freedom to engage in a culture of religious liberty. But we have to recognize that without law, there is no liberty. Without fences, there is no freedom. On this program and others before, I've quoted G.K. Chesterton, who said that if you want freedom, you have to build fences, and without law, there is no liberty. It's the paradox of discipline and freedom, and that's the magic of the American experiment. It's not a free-for-all, it is a free country. And we only enjoy liberties within the confines of given parameters that we are designed to operate within. And if you have anarchy and you break down those parameters, if you discard those walls, if you ignore the foundation upon which freedom is built, you don't get liberty, you get tyranny. You get anarchy, and at the end of the day, when you get rid of the big laws that are given to us by God, you do not get liberty, but you get thousands of little laws that rush in to fill the vacuum. Without the assumption of the Christian religion, we have no rights, because there is nothing righteous to define those rights. There's no measuring rod outside of those things being measured. You can do no measuring unless Lady Justice is blind, unless she is refusing to put her thumb on the scales. We are designed to operate within certain constraints that actually enhance rather than impede our liberties. It's that fence that gives us the liberty, the freedom, to enjoy the territory that we've been given as a free culture and a free society. If there is no Creator, we're not going to have freedom. We're going to have power, and we're going to have privilege. And the people that enjoy that power and privilege are going to impose their way, their views, their worldview upon all of the rest of us, because there's no longer any reason for them not to. I'm going to stop right now. I'm going to take a call. I think I've got Fred from Texas. Fred, are you there?
Yes. Yes, you do.
Fred, welcome to Washington Watch. What can I do for you?
Okay. The senator who was commenting on North Korea has his head up his proverbial pants.
Tell me why.
Well, he has never spent any time with those people. He doesn't know their mindset. I've been around those people. I know their mindset. And the thing is they would nuke us in a heartbeat if they got the chance. They have a satellite that's stationary over the United States, central-wide in the United States. And if it has a nuclear weapon and they set it off, it would set this country into the 10th century.
Okay, so Fred, what would you do?
Pardon?
Fred, what would you do? What would you tell our president or our Congress to do?
Somebody needs to take that boy out. Now, I'm not necessarily against for this type of action, but when it comes to protecting yours against some, I'll put down first.
Okay, thank you, Fred. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate your concern. While many of the listeners may not agree with taking preemptive action because of all the negative consequences that you can't control if you do, I mean, war is an ugly business. You can't go in and just guarantee that everybody's going to throw up their hands and wave the white flag once you go in preemptively. You're going to have negative consequences. And Fred, I'm sure you and others listening right now that would even agree with your more aggressive posture would admit that. So I guess the question is, what are we as a country and as a culture willing to risk in this particular situation? And Fred, where I agree with you is I think the previous two administrations, and I'm putting George W. Bush in the mix here too, I'm not sure what we were doing in the face of this threat. Why were we complicit in allowing, it wasn't just two, it's Clinton, Bush, and Obama have been complicit in allowing this man to be where he is today, to develop these weapons. And now you and I have to make a decision as to what's best to deal with this problem. And the congressman is right. There's no good solution right now. I think Fred has a legitimate point. I'm not too sure these people are going to be so reticent to use these weapons as perhaps what the congressman was suggested. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because he is privy to some of the discussions that are going on behind closed doors that none of the rest of us enjoy. Roger from Missouri, are you still with me? Welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes, sir. I appreciate the hard work you guys are doing, but I got to ask you a question. Didn't the Supreme Court, the highest court in your land, back in the 70s or 80s, did they not declare atheism as a religion?
You know, Roger, I don't know for sure. I'm going to plead ignorance. I don't know if the Supreme Court actually made that official in their view or not. But what I will say is that you're spot on. Atheism is a view of God. Atheism is a view of theism. Atheism is an argument for a worldview, and it includes origins, nature, redemption, and responsibility. The four components of any worldview in any religion are, as I just described, origin of man, nature of man, redemption of man, and responsibility of man. Where do we come from? What is our nature? Are we good or evil? Are we sinful or not? Do we have any opportunities for redeeming ourselves, for fixing the problem? And then what is our responsibility to exercise those obligations? That is part and parcel of any religion. And atheism has an answer to all of those. So when atheists say that they don't believe in religion, that's hogwash. They do believe in religion. They do believe in a view of God. They just want to deny God rather than affirm God. But they want to impose and establish their worldview, establish their religion, if you will, on all of the rest of us, which the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment prohibits. It says that you shall not establish, that you're prohibited from establishing a religion or prohibiting the free expression thereof. So when we're told that you can't express your Christian faith in the public square, that is antithetical to our First Amendment rights and to the Establishment Clause. And when they say that they're not going to establish a religion within the tax-sponsored tax arena of our culture, in other words, the public sector, then they're not telling the truth, because they are establishing atheism as the theism of what's acceptable in our culture. Does that make sense? Thank you, Roger, for calling in. Sadie from Georgia, I believe I've got you on the line. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Dr. Pepper, I will strongly disagree with you about your assessment of this thing with President Trump, with the news media. Listen, the rest of the presidents, they ain't come up against them. They have, but not like they come up against this president. I think he's doing just exactly what he should do, and I condone him. Everything he's doing it right. He's the only president we've ever had that's trying to help us people and to help us as churches to be able to, for the pastors to preach the gospel. So I'm for him with 100%, and I disagree with y'all saying that the other ways he should go about trying to talk it out. No, they ain't going to listen to him talking it out. He needs to do what he's doing with these tweets. That's the only way he's got to get it out.
Well, Sadie, I appreciate your comments. I'm not too sure I disagree with you as much as you're implying, so maybe I didn't communicate as well as I thought I did earlier. So let me just go around the barn one more time here. I think pushing back is appropriate. I think when you've been falsely accused in the public square, then you often have to respond in the public square and clarify things. I do think that the president has the bully pulpit and has the upper hand, and I think he should use it shrewdly and wisely. I think there are times, for example, I was advised once recently to don't take the bait when you're involved in a Facebook exchange or a social media argument. Don't take the bait, because it often diminishes your status when you do so. So, should Donald Trump push back? Absolutely. Is the media unfair? Absolutely. Is the media biased in a liberal and a progressive fashion? No question. Do they want to see this president fail? Yes. Do they hold antithetical views to conservatives? No question in the world. So what should our president do? Fight against all of those things. Absolutely. Spot on. I agree. It's just the method. It's the method used that I think sometimes we ought to evaluate. Don't take the bait. Don't lower yourself to the adversary's status. In other words, sometimes a pit bull can tackle a skunk, but there's a good reason that you might not want to get in the fight, because everybody comes out smelling pretty bad. Lawrence from Texas, are you with me?
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. What can I do for you?
Awesome. I was just going to go over, when you were going over the Constitution at the last part of your message. Two things. One, at church, we had a speaker going over the Constitution, and she went over, I always screw up this word, unalienable rights that you were going over.
Correct.
She broke that down to us as saying those rights are rights from God. Those aren't man-made rights. So those rights cannot be changed. You know, we cannot change the rights. So they're from God and himself, you know, and that's what we go off of Christianity. So it was awesome that my church did that. I had a speaker come in and break everything down for us. The other thing is, it's kind of off topic, is my kids that have teenagers, with the writing and the cursive and all this other good stuff.
Right.
I'm afraid to say it. My kids can't even read the Constitution. They don't even teach cursive or writing. Yeah. So it's sad to say a lot of people can't even read the Constitution now to know what it is, unless, you know, they go to church or they do something themselves. But
Thank you for calling in, Lawrence. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. And I think your admonition on making sure that our kids know how to read it's very important. I'm an educator, and I agree. The loss of the ability to even read a handwritten letter is quite frankly shameful. You're probably going to have to correct that problem in your households from here on out, because I doubt very many of the schools, unless they're private, are going to even address the issue. So it's something parents need to take very seriously at home. And again, going back to your original point, I'll quote Thomas Jefferson again. I hold that when we take a view of the universe, when we look at the universe and its parts, it is impossible not to perceive design and consummate skill and infinite power. It's impossible not to believe that there is a creator, a fabricator of all these things that we see. It's for these reasons that Jefferson then said, we're endowed by our creator with certain unalienable rights. These rights are not created by man. They're given to us by God. That's the important thing. I'm going to close out with a very quick word here. Very quick word. Remember that the greatest error is defining yourself to be as God. That's the original sin. You are not God. God is God. He gives you your rights. You don't define them. He gives them. You don't define life. You don't define male and female. You don't define liberty. You don't define death. It's given to us by God. This is Dr. Everett Piper sitting in for Tony Perkins. Thank you for allowing me to join you today. And remember, as you go about your daily business, to keep fighting the good fight, because you know who wins. Take care, and we'll talk to you tomorrow afternoon here on Washington Watch.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.